Greetings, listeners. Welcome to the Cold Fusion Now podcast, where we bring you the latest developments in the science and engineering of Cold Fusion Lenner. I'm your host, Ruby Carrot. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Andrew Muhlenberg, an experimental physicist turned cold fusion theoretician. He earned a PhD from Vanderbilt University in low energy nuclear physics and spent 37 years in the aerospace industry at ComSat Laboratories as an independent consultant and a principal scientist at Draper Laboratories, the old MIT instrumentation lab. Welcome, Dr. Muhlenberg.
Hello, Ruby. Thank you for having me contribute to your verbal record of the developments in low-energy nuclear reactions.
First of all, talk about how you got started in this research. What made you want to tackle one of the most challenging scientific questions of our time?
Well, as a nuclear physicist, I was particularly excited about Pons and Fleischmann's announcement of a new possibly nuclear energy source. Since my job at the time was to improve the performance, reliability, and life of space solar power systems for geostationary satellites, the possibility of a new power system, one that might not be vulnerable to the near-Earth space environment, was of professional interest as well. My division director, a physical chemist with an extensive solid-state physics background, was, of course, also interested in the news. From my first publication, which showed long charging times and relatively brief periods of excess heat, our concern was that there was an unknown storage mechanism in the bulk of palladium. With later work showing excess heat exceeding input energy, our work on overcharging possibilities no longer pertained. Since there was also negative press developing and we had other responsibilities, I had no more time for cold fusion for nearly 13 years.
Oh, wow.
Just prior to the end of that time, I was working at Draper Lab on a project that involved Professor K.P. Sinha, who was working across the street at MIT. K.P., with two PhDs, one in solid state and another in theoretical physics, had maintained his interest in cold fusion from the beginning. We did not have time to do more than discuss over lunch some of the work on cold fusion. However, the project ended about a year later and he returned to India. Over the next 2 years, I had retired from Draper and obtained a position as visiting scientist at the Indian Institute of Science, where KP was professor emeritus. He educated me there on the subject of cold fusion, and we worked together closely for a decade until recently when I returned to the U.S.
Andrew Muhlenberg, you co-edited the special Lenner section of Current Science in 2015, together with former Bhabha Atomic Research Center scientist Dr. Mahadeva Srinivasan. And that gave a broad picture of a field diverse in both experimental results and theoretical understanding. Can you describe the state of research in Lenner theory? Are we any closer to understanding what this mysterious cold fusion Lenner reaction is?
The Current Science special section was intended to be an opportunity for various authors to review their previous experimental work and theoretical models in their own words, and not as often misinterpreted by others. Only a couple exceptions were made to allow unpublished work to be presented. Thus, much new work, both theoretical and experimental, has been presented since then. In both cases, it appears that there may not be a unique model for cold fusion, because there are new experimental results that appear to be outside the normal range. We don't know if the present models also apply to the new work or not. It may be that one or more of the prior models that have been previously rejected based on one or more sets of data could pertain to the new results. As a broad new field, both the experimental work and theoretical modeling in cold fusion are constantly evolving as new data and ideas present themselves. For example, K.P. Sinha and I started our work in 2006 on the premise that overcoming the repulsion between two nuclei was the major problem in cold fusion. 2 years later, at the 14th International Conference on Cold Fusion, Professor Akito Takahashi talked about how just overcoming this Coulomb barrier in deuterium fusion would not give the observed results for cold fusion. This shocking revelation could have been the final nail in the coffin of cold fusion proposed by some people. However, based on the work we had done and an offhand remark by Tom Barnard, our whole new field of study, deep electron orbits, was opened for both physics and cold fusion. About the same time as the early findings of elemental transmutation in cold fusion gained more support and was observed without the expected radiation, the uniqueness of these new cold fusion experimental results had to be explained as well. The deep orbit model was able to address the transmutation results in addition to the original fusion results. A theoretical basis for the deep electron models, or deep electron orbits, is provided by a controversial aspect of the well-accepted Klein, Gordon, and Dirac relativistic quantum equations. After showing how this deep orbit electron could explain so many of the anomalies observed in cold fusion research, I was fortunate in finding help from Jean-Luc Pallet, a retired applied mathematics professor, who could prove that the prediction of these deep orbits is valid and should no longer be considered controversial. I believe that his work on relativistic potentials will eventually lead to an understanding of nuclear forces. Solving the cold fusion problem not only provides a possible solution to the world's energy pollution and warming problems, it could have a major impact on resolving some of the major theoretical problems in relativistic quantum mechanics. Nevertheless, experimental nor theoretical work is mature at this point, and both will still experience growing pains and growth spurts.
As a Lehner theorist yourself, how do you deal with the vast variety of data in Lehner experiments? And also, how is your theory being tested experimentally?
I have mentioned my belief in the deep orbit electrons as an explanation for all of the cold fusion results. And I've examined a lot of them, but not all. However, every time a new result is presented as a challenge to the model, the model comes out successful or even unique in its ability to explain the data. The best test of my theory is not in the heat results of cold fusion, but in the radiation products, or lack thereof, in the transmutation results. Only a few models predict DD fusion beneath the fragmentation level of helium-4, and mine may be the only one that can explain elemental transmutation without the known accompanying radiation.
We'll be right back after this. Be sure to mark your calendars for the next International Conference on Condensed Matter Nuclear Science, ICCF 21, being held in the Laurie Student Center at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, Colorado, U.S. The conference runs next summer, June 3rd through the 8th, 2018. For more information and registration, go to www.iccf21.com. And we're back with Dr. Andrew Muhlenberg discussing Lehner theory. Dr. Muhlenberg, in your opinion, what experiments need to happen in order to further theoretical understanding of the Lehner reaction?
Some experiments have already been performed that could confirm my model. However, since the data and materials resulting from them are proprietary, they would become available for testing only at a date appropriate for advertising a commercially available product. If one of the predictions of my model were to be confirmed incontrovertibly, within days, millions of dollars would become available for research into cold fusion. Within months, billions of dollars would be committed to compete with the present ventures. Were I providing venture capital for cold fusion development, I certainly would not permit premature release of anything that would increase or aid the existing or potential competition. Positive results of some specific tests would confirm my model. However, no results on present materials would be expected, because the lifetime of the critical products would likely be in a fraction of a second, so they would not be around by the time testing is possible. Once large levels of cold fusion in accessible reactors becomes available, then real-time testing for unique products becomes feasible.
What impact will a successful theory have on the engineering of a useful technology?
If the theory is proven, then there are many scientists who, never having looked at cold fusion, would apply their expertise to the problem. They would have ideas as to how to best achieve the deep orbit electrons needed for both overcoming the Coulomb barrier and eliminating radioactivity in the fusion and transmutation products. Many labs would compete for the prize of being first. Many resulting cold fusion products from both newly formed companies and established firms would then compete in the marketplace.
Where can people learn more about your theoretical work in cold fusion, Leonard?
Most of my technical work in cold fusion is freely available in various issues of the Journal of Condensed Matter Nuclear Science. Although my earliest work with K.P. Sinha is in Current Science, National Academy of Science in India.
Well, Dr. Andrew Muhlenberg, thank you for speaking with us and good luck with your research.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today has been Dr. Andrew Muhlenberg, a low-energy nuclear physicist now focused on solving the theoretical puzzle of the Lehner reaction. His work can be found in the Journal of Condensed Matter Nuclear Science and at www.lenr.org. Well, that's it for today. Remember, you can find more episodes of the Cold Fusion Now podcast on our website at www.coldfusionnow.org and on iTunes. Until next time, I'm your host, Ruby Carrot.